I've got the morbs today.
Are you having a no bones day?
I am having a no bones day. He died, did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
Rest in peace, Noodle. How's your day?
My day has been very, very busy. And of course, it's snowed and sleeted and rained and slushed.
It's been raining here forever.
Yeah.
By the way, you're listening to an Hour of Your Life podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is Steve.
And it is finally snowing in Ohio after days and days and days of rain that if it had been snow, we would not be able to leave the house. But it is snow. It's raining.
If it would have been snow, if it had been colder, we'd probably have 20 feet of snow.
But it's not.
No.
So we just have mud and gross and the morbs. Well, I have the morbs. I don't know if you have the morbs, but no, I do.
I don't.
So today we are, so last week I did a lot of the digging into the stuff. It was nice to get back into the research chair for once. I used to do a lot of research, and then you kind of took it over by not like forced. Like I didn't make you do the research.
If it was going to get done.
Well, I got busy with things, and so you just did it, and then you just kept on doing it. And so I got to do it last week, and actually I really forgot how fun researching is, but you took it back this week. But I'm going to help out next week, because next week's I'm really excited about. But okay, so let's give a hypothetical situation. Okay?
Okay.
A drunk driver gets pulled over by a city cop.
Uh-oh.
The driver they're drunk. Maybe they're just a little belligerent. Alcohol starts talking. He starts to get brave.
Nah, that never happens to anybody.
I'm not drunk. You have no right to pull me over.
Wait, you gotta say that in a drunken voice.
I am.
Okay.
That's my drunk voice. I'm not drunk. You have no right to pull me over. You can't do this to me. Get your hands off me. I'll sue you. I'll take you to the Supreme Court of the United States if I have to. So I'm willing to bet that most cops have heard this or some variation of that at some point in their careers. But guess what? That case, not going to the Supreme Court of the United States. And why? Well, the threat comes from the drunk not knowing the court system like they think they do. Also, this is not the type of case that will make it to the Supreme Court.
So we here at An Hour of Your Life are here to educate you so you don't look dumb as you drunkenly yell at the cop about something you have no clue about.
Please don't yell at the cops. They work really hard.
Yeah. The United States judicial system is a really regimented system with clear paths to seek justice, either by the state or by the plaintiff. The system may start off, you know, down at the very lowest level with the city's mayor's court or some other name a locality may call their first level of judicial proceedings, and it progresses all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States.
So in this episode, we're going to walk you through the structure of the court system, the type of cases each court may hear. There's a lot to it. We thought that with all the court cases going on that we hear about nationally, you know, it's an election year.
This has been held by the Fifth Circuit Court and
the
Appeals Court and all that stuff.
If you are interested, we're not really going to get into it on the show, but I am, as soon as the show's over, I'm going to do a minute of your life for this week, where we're going to be talking about the difference between treason, insurrection, and sedition. So if you are interested in those things, go check out our TikTok at An Hour of Your Life, where I will be doing, or on the website. Anyway, slight plug. Anyway, getting back to what we were saying. So we wanted to take the time and research and educate ourselves about the process and help you in the process. So let's give a little bit of background for context. When you hear about going to court, you probably think something criminal has happened and the accused is going before a court to decide innocence or guilt. And if found guilty, what the punishment will be. That's typically what we think of when we think of going to court. Even in minor traffic things, like what we said. That certainly might be the case. However, you might also be getting sued, or you might want to sue somebody in a civil case. And essentially, you are asking a court to decide who is right. It might be a property dispute, which I remember we went through once before with someone who had some property of someone's in our family and would not return it. And that was...
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. But yeah. So we ended up... I don't think we ever actually went to court. We just filed the paperwork and she gave it back.
No.
Did we go to court?
We actually went to court and I got to play lawyer.
Yeah. So it might be something like that, a property dispute. It could be a copyright dispute. Copyright law is not exciting at all, but from what I understand, it is very lucrative. Could be any dispute where nothing even criminal has happened. It's just you're asking the courts to intervene on your behalf. So maybe like you had medical bills, you have to declare bankruptcy, then you go to bankruptcy court. Even within the courts, there are specialty courts that only hear certain types of cases.
So with that, let's start at the highest level of court and work our way down to mayor's court. So we're going to spend a little bit more time on the Supreme Court, but first a little background on the United States justice system. Our American justice system has evolved from English common law into a complex series of procedures and decisions. We're going to try to keep this as interesting as we can,
because it might get dry.
But personally, I found this is really fascinating. So our court system was founded on the concept that crimes against an individual are crimes against the state. Not a communist state, but like...
Well,
that's what you thought.
To me, it sounds like crimes against the individual or crimes against the state sounds vaguely communistic to me, because I don't belong to the state. Well, I belong to me.
But it's... the state of Ohio's laws, so they are crimes against the state of Ohio. That's what it's saying. So our justice system prosecutes individuals as though they victimize all of society. So some things, you know, you've heard you have to press charge to do that.
Right.
Some cases have been taken out of your hands, and that's what they're saying. The state of Ohio is going to press charges against you.
Which is kind of...
So it's
kind of sucks, but kind of also doesn't suck, because like
domestic violence.
Domestic violence, you need, that is an example of where it doesn't suck. Like, you need Ohio to step in on your behalf, whether you want to prosecute or not. Somebody needs to protect you.
Stereotypically speaking, a woman is going to get beat up and she's afraid of the male, probably, who abused her, beat her up and stuff like that. So it's been taken out of her hand that she doesn't have to press charges, the state of Ohio. So it's a crime against the state of Ohio.
In those situations, totally makes sense. In others, I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But like in other situations, like property law or something like that, like property law, it really, I can sort of fight my own battle on that. Like, I don't need the state of Ohio to say belonged to me and you have to give it back.
Wait till we get into the legal terms. Like simple little cases like that in civil cases aren't what we're talking about. We're talking about criminal cases.
Okay, so where the state's going to prosecute. Stuff. Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. So common law follows the principles, and boy, these are some Latin terms. I wish you'd have been reading these. Stare decisis, and that is Latin meaning...
Stare decisis.
Stand by your decision. So stare decisis is a legal principle stating that a prior court decision, such as a ruling by another court, is recognized and there's now precedent set in what they would call case law. Okay. If a case is deemed a precedent case, then lower courts are compelled, they have to rule in the same way as what the precedent case was. So you can't just have one judge over here saying, we'll do this, but the judge over here is like, throw the book at him. We're going to do that.
Okay.
So there's got to be precedents.
Gotcha.
You follow what we're saying.
Okay. If there is a precedent. If there's not a precedent, you could set the precedent.
Then it starts going on up.
Yeah.
Okay, so this applies only if precedent case is binding or mandatory. The rationale for, what did you say?
Stare decisis,
and it looks like stare at me, in precedent cases is judicial efficiency. It's fairness to the parties and predictability and a check and balance on arbitrary behavior.
So stare decisis is what prevents you from filing frivolous lawsuits. Or, well, not filing them. It gets them thrown out.
No, it is if you get prosecuted for robbing a bank, mm-hmm. there's precedent, like what the penalties and what it's going to be.
They right, but you said it also is a check and balance and arbitrary behavior.
Yeah.
So frivolous
arbitrary
lawsuits.
Of rulings.
Oh, okay.
Of rulings.
Okay, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope they know what we're talking about. Okay. So, without going to law school, let's kind of take a dive now into the Supreme Court. Now that we've already established, this is going to be a very complicated thing. So, you may have to play this episode two or three times to really figure
hopefully
it out.
Hopefully, we can get through. Hopefully, yeah. I can get through it. I'm sure you can. Yeah.
So, the Supreme Court of the United States is the highest court in the United States. And where does it get its power from? Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution created the Supreme Court and authorized Congress to pass laws establishing a lower system of courts. In the federal court system in present form, there are 94 district-level trial courts and 13 courts of appeals that sit below the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, we're talking about the federal court system here.
Okay. Because that was going to be, when I was looking at these numbers, I was like, there's only 13 appellate courts?
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem like very many.
Well, there's federal crimes, which only the federal court can hear, and then there's state crimes.
Which are different appellate courts.
And then we'll get down to like mayor's court where there's
you
got a speeding ticket, okay?
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court is made up of 9 presidentially appointed justices, and they get this appointment
for life.
It's a lifelong appointment. And so, you know, there's always a Democrats or Republicans appointing. So the Supreme Court is supposed to judge on the law, basically strictly interpreting this is what the law says. But depending if you're a liberal or a conservative, you can have a different look on how that law can be interpreted. And that's why it's important why Congress and people want to appoint when, you know, Republicans want to appoint when there's a Republican president, and Democrats want to appoint when there's a Democrat.
Yeah, but I really feel like, generally speaking, maybe not always, but generally speaking, the Supreme Court, I feel like, has done a pretty good job historically of not being overly political.
And that's how it's supposed to be.
Right.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Historically.
Yeah. But like right now in the United States, there's a more
conservatives
in there. So rulings are going to tend to favor a conservative slant versus.
To me, this is one of the most conservative Supreme Courts that we have had, certainly in my lifetime. Definitely, I would say, in a very long time.
Yeah. This is how it was set up, and that's how it is.
Yep.
Okay, now, interesting fact, those 9 justices that are there, that's not set in the Constitution. Congress could go through and authorize more justices. And that was the thing back when they were talking about what they said, reversing Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Democrats wanted to, at that point, and this is not political, and so we're not going there.
Advocating or anything, advocating one way or another.
So, The Democrats, when the Republican majority of the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade and said it goes back to the states, well, the liberal side of everything got really, really upset, and the Democrats in Congress said, well, we'll just go ahead and we're going to appoint more, while Biden is president, we're just going to appoint more liberal justices to get that overturned. But that kind of fell through because I think even our congressmen and senators saw this is really dumb because, okay, so if a Republican gets in next, instead of having 20, he'll appoint 40. And it's...
Yeah, it's like a never ending. Yeah. Do you know that process? Like, how do you get how would you even do that? Congress has to vote on it, or somebody has to?
No, I don't know. It's law.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. How they would do it.
Please
I don't
do
know.
That.
Yeah.
If you're a politician or a lawyer, please leave it alone.
So
I wonder if it could go the other way, though. Like, can they say that we have, what, we have nine now?
Yeah.
If they can say nine,
the number is not set by how many.
So theoretically, if a Supreme Court justice dies, nobody has to replace them. Like, the president could just choose not to replace that person.
But why would a president want to do that?
Well, I'm just saying theoretically, yeah, it could happen.
That could happen.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Continue.
So, not every case that is brought to the Supreme Court where people want the Supreme Court to hear it ever really makes it through there. And it's, you know, only in the minds of the justices know why they deny hearing a specific case. But generally, the cases heard by the Supreme Court tend to share some of the same similar characteristics. Broadly speaking, these traits can be said to fall into two categories of important legal questions and issues of national significance. More specifically, the types of Supreme Court cases include constitutional cases. The Supreme Court hears cases that answer important constitutional questions like the balance of power between the federal government and state governments and individual rights and freedoms. The court is periodically called upon to interpret the U.S. Constitution and how it affects people's rights as well as the nation as a whole, such as the right to free speech, the right to bear arms, and the conduct of elections, and the environment. There are also federal law cases. This is where the Supreme Court has what's called original jurisdiction over appeals cases and controversies that arise under the U.S. Constitution. So laws enacted by Congress, cases related to federal admiralty law.
That's going to come into play.
That's
going to
come into play, yeah. Cases involving treaties and cases where the United States itself is the named party. So that traffic ticket probably isn't going to make it unless there were civil rights violations that were like across the spectrum, like a state was obviously violating someone's civil rights by doing this. Then it could potentially make it.
I don't know why. I don't even remember if it was federal or not, but when you say cases where the United States itself is a named party, you know what immediately comes to mind, and I don't know why.
I have no clue, Kim.
The People versus Larry Flint.
Okay.
Was that a federal case? I think it was.
I don't know.
Might I don't remember. We should watch that movie. Anyway, what immediately came to mind. But yeah, okay. Anyway.
So cases involving the states. When two states are engaged in a lawsuit against each other, say, for example, when Vermont and New York shared a river and they fought over its pollution levels, the Supreme Court had to come in to resolve that conflict.
I think also at one point Michigan and Wisconsin were fighting over the UP, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was a thing.
Probably so. It's snowy up there right now.
Yeah.
So Carl's up there like,
hey, Carl.
Digging through snow. Actually, I don't think they have a lot of snow up there right now.
Not too bad.
Okay, so civil rights and liberties cases. The Supreme Court hears cases where civil rights and liberties are at issue, particularly under the U.S. Constitution's Bill of Rights, which is the foundation of American individuals' freedoms like the right to vote, the right to believe any religion, or the right to assemble. We're talking First Amendment rights here. The right to be free of unlawful search and seizure, and the right to a fair trial, and other important rights. So in recent years, even months, the Supreme Court has rendered many major decisions in civil rights arena on such topics as affirmative action, abortion, gender identity, and expression.
Can the Supreme Court revoke amendments?
No.
So once an amendment is there, it's there.
Yeah.
You can't, like prohibition, that was an amendment. So we had to have an amendment an amendment?
Yeah. You don't remember that thing?
Yes, so the Supreme, I know.
As long as it's passed by Congress, it's legal. And it goes through that process, it's legal.
Okay.
But they had to
amend
it with another amendment and pull it off. The Supreme Court can't go through and do that. I mean, technically, that's a good question. I mean, if the amendment was illegal,
then
the Supreme Court would have to rule if that was illegal. But if it's passed by Congress,
cycle.
It does.
We're in a really interesting period, and the fact that you bring out, you mentioned gender identity is really interesting to me. I feel like we're in sort of the Wild West of legality right now with sort of self-identity as well as technological stuff like AI.
Well, yeah, we discussed that one.
Yeah, I feel like over the next, I would say probably 10 to 20 years, there's going to be a whole lot of new Supreme Court cases and major decisions.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can't keep up with technology, yeah. For example, and gender identity like this. Five years ago, who would have thought this would have been an issue? So right. Now states are making laws
right.
about this and about like AI and technology. And so those cases will have to work up through all this court system to where eventually one will be heard by the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court will either say,
it's one of those
biological
times.
Men can go into the women's restroom or they can't.
Yeah. It's one of those times. You always think of times in history when you were like, I wonder what it was like to be alive in those. This is one of those time periods that we are alive in a very, very significant period of time.
Yeah, it's. I've got some whole things on that too. Anyway, criminal cases. So at the highest level of the appellate process, criminal cases sometimes find their way to the Supreme Court. In particular, where constitutional rights are intertwined with a criminal investigation, prosecution, or conviction. Again, this isn't just like a simple case. There's got to be a lot to it to make it that high. The Supreme Court has ruled on issues of search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment and the necessity of the police reading the Miranda rights. You know, that's you have the right to a lawyer mm-hmm. and all that stuff. To arrest a person under the Fifth Amendment, and the right to a speedy trial in impartial jury under the Sixth Amendment. Cruel and unusual punishment of prisoners who are convicted of crimes is contained in the Eighth Amendment, which cases may come before the Supreme Court. So, mm-hmm. yeah, these things
I'm not will talking just, about it right now.
Yeah.
We saw here in Ohio, they're thinking about using a new form of
execution,
the execution, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for prisoners. And I would be interested to see if that goes before the Supreme Court or if it already has.
It'll go before the Ohio Supreme
yeah.
Court.
Yeah, not the federal, but the Ohio Supreme yeah. Court. It'd be interesting to yeah. see.
And the death penalty has already been ruled
right.
constitutional. But then they will
that's
challenge...
That's another one.
But they will challenge the method of execution as cruel or unusual punishment.
So... what happened back in the 70s when there were no, do you remember when there were no, like Charles Manson, that's why he was not executed because there was no death penalty.
In the state of California at that time.
Oh, I thought it was federal.
No, he was charged with a state crime.
Oh, I thought he was federally charged.
No, that was a state crime.
Okay, anyway.
Okay, so other types of cases that might make it to the Supreme Court have also been known to hear cases that are highly unusual, such as the United States versus Nixon concerning the Watergate scandal, or Bush versus Gore concerning the you remember that? The
hanging chads.
The dangling chads and yep. the hanging chads, the election of 2000, as well as cases where lower courts completely disregard the Supreme Court's precedents, known as a stare decisis, and also in cases which one or several of the justices have a personal interest.
Like, wait, so like personal interest is in that case affects them personally? Or like, because that seems like a slippery
slope.
Or
maybe they've invested in some sort of
that
company or something.
That seems like a slippery slope, especially like with issues of religious nationalism. Like if you are unable to, whatever your religious bent is, if you are unable to keep that from your decisions in your Supreme Court rulings, that's definitely an issue. Or if you have, like you said, an investment in a company that is being sued, like that doesn't seem like that's
I think that's
fair.
What they're talking about because...
Or just in general, like that doesn't seem like that should be something that justice should recuse themselves from that
That's
from
what
that
they're
case.
Supposed to do, but I mean... just because it's like, say, I'm making something up, sure. like a religious thing. Just because the judge happens to be Christian doesn't mean he would have to recuse himself. I think they're talking about a different level of personal interest here. Like, they're completely invested into some company that if they're ruling will allow this company to continue to operate and they'll make
a billion dollars
off of. I think that's what they're talking about.
It's so complicated.
Yeah, it is.
The election of 2000, by the way, was my first election, and I can't believe that that was my first election. Like, the Hanging Chads election was my very first one, and it's been out downhill ever since. Anyway, all right, so how do cases get to the Supreme Court? And I know you're probably going to interrupt me. You can interrupt me as many times as you want, because I interrupted you a whole bunch of times, because I have questions. The people want to know, and I'm the voice of the people. Okay, so assuming a case is capable of being heard by the Supreme Court, the very first step in most cases is for the case to be filed at the state or federal trial court level.
Right.
The trial court judge will review the evidence. They'll listen to the plaintiff and the defense, or the prosecution and the defense, as the case may be. Then they will render their decision. Once a final judicial decision is rendered, the affected party is then permitted to appeal the case to the next highest court, which in the state system would either be an appellate court, or a state Supreme Court, depending on the state, because different states have different, whether it's an appellate court or
and
a state
within
court.
The state, that goes back to the very first things we talked about. If a person who's been convicted thinks, or my penalty isn't fair because you didn't treat everyone else. Remember, precedence. Yeah.
Yep. So it goes to this appellate court or state Supreme Court, and then in the federal court will be one of the 13 appellate district courts. So when the litigant, so the person that is appealing, has taken their case as far as they can, through the state system, then they can consider appealing to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the state system either later tonight or next week.
I don't know, at some point.
Okay.
Okay, so then the next step is to prepare a petition for...
You say that one.
A petition for certiorari or certiorari. It's a petition.
That's Latin. That's Latin, Kim.
It's the document that the Supreme Court will read in order to decide whether or not to hear the case. So it's basically like the Cliff's Notes of your case.
This is why you go to law school.
Right.
To learn how to speak
to
Latin.
To say this.
Yeah.
So this petition has certain requirements, including procedural history. Is there a precedent? Have we looked at the precedent? What are the arguments? There are essential facts, legal issues being presented, and the actual question for the Supreme Court to answer in their ultimately drafted opinions. So what are you trying to decide? Point blank.
What do you want us to do?
Yes. So all of this is put together in a handy little booklet. Like I said, it's the Cliff's Notes of everything that you've been through at the state level. The adversary will also have a chance to present their opposition. This is called briefing. So like if you and I were in a court case, I went through all my appeals all the way up to the state level, and I finally got to go. I'm going to the Supreme Court. I put together my little booklet, give it to them, and you say, wait. I also have a chance to say why you should not be heard by the Supreme Court.
It kind of goes to court before court.
Yeah. So on certain major issues, outside parties may weigh in with amicus briefs.
Ooh.
Which amicus means
big brain on Kim.
Amicus, like amicable, same root word.
Is that Latin?
Amicus is Latin. Amicable comes from Latin.
Okay.
Means briefs from friends of the courts. Amicable, friends. Get it? So they have insight on a particular legal issue. So some of those amicus briefs might be, I would think, maybe like professional testimony from experts.
Yeah,
or
that's what I'm getting out of this.
Or maybe even, what do they call it? When people say that you're a good person. Character witnesses.
Yeah.
Possibly even character witnesses, although I'm guessing it's more along the realm of professional
opinion,
expertise.
Yeah.
So the entire petition file, the whole shebang from both of us, goes to a pool of Supreme Court clerks. So we're not even going to the justices yet. We go to the clerks first. They're often recent law school graduates, which in my mind makes them probably a little more liberal because they are fresh from law school. And I feel like when you're in your early 20s or mid 20s, generally you have a slightly more liberal bent than as you get older.
But that would be true probably, but the conservative justices aren't going to interview and hire those
true.
Clerks. They're going to hire clerks that...
That's true.
And again, the court is supposed to be neutral. Supposed to be, let's just interpret the law.
But these clerks, so the Supreme Court clerks, probably also because they're recent graduates, they have all of these things fresh in their minds. So I could see how that could be good too.
But I think all they're doing is looking up case law and precedents and stuff like that.
Well,
they're not making decisions.
Yes, they are. Well, they're making recommendations. So the Supreme Court clerks review all the documents, make sure everything's there. They summarize those even further for the justices. So we've already got the Cliff's Notes version. Now the court clerks are making the dumbed down version of the Cliff Notes version. And they are including their recommendation on whether or not to take the case. So after the Supreme Court clerks read everything, dumb it down, they present it to the Supreme Court and say, I mean, you could listen to it, but it's kind of a boring, lame case that nobody cares about.
Hey, let me put something out right now. If a justice of the Supreme Court just happens to be listening to this right now, call us and we will go live with you next week so you can explain all this to us.
Or even a clerk. We'll take a Supreme
Just
Court clerk.
Anyone from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Even a lawyer.
If you're like the janitor for the Supreme Court, just let us know.
Or even just a lawyer, okay? Judge Judy, call us. Okay.
So the justices then make a final decision on whether they're going to hear the case. And for this, 4 out of the 9 judges must agree to grant cert, or more formally, to issue a writ of... That word again that I can't say, certiorari, or however you say it.
I think that's pretty close.
If fewer than 4 justices want to take up the case, it's denied. So.
Don't bother me with your petty problems.
Yeah, so you know, I can see how.
You didn't see the dramatic hand wave.
Yeah, there's. So I can definitely see how it could be very disappointing if you don't get an appeal at the state level, because then you could appeal to the Supreme Court, but your likelihood of making it is probably 0 to 0.
Kind of like a lot of people waiting on veterans.
In fact, the vast majority of legal cases and controversies never even make it past those clerks.
Give us some statistics here.
A survey of filed petitions shows that between 2010 and 2020, the Supreme Court received approximately 10,000 petitions. So that means 10,000 got past the clerks. And no, 10,000 got to the clerks. And of those 10,000, only about 80 cases per year were heard. Less than 10% of the cases were heard by the Supreme Court. So your odds of getting heard by the Supreme Court of the United States are less than nothing.
So you're saying my speeding ticket out there for 45 and a 35 is probably not going to make it to the Supreme Court.
You're not going to make it.
And no, I didn't get a ticket for 45 and a 35. I was just...
Because you talked your way out of it.
That was a 35 and a 25. and the speed limit changed like 200 feet in front of me. I was starting to accelerate, but the cop pulled me over and we started talking and we kind of knew some common people. And next thing you know, that written warning just turned into it starts right there. Okay. So I think we beat the Supreme Court enough here.
Maybe we might come back to it. There's a lot.
I mean, this is
so much.
As we sit here and
I think it's very ambitious of you to try to cram this all into one episode. I'm guessing this is going to be a two-parter.
Probably so. And we can add, my mind is already thinking of stuff we can add to talk about with this. So anyway, let's talk about the courts at the federal level below the Supreme Court.
Okay.
There is the Court of Appeals. Now there are 13 appellate courts that are below the United States Supreme Court, and they are called the United States Courts of Appeals.
Well, that's creative.
Yeah. There are 94 federal judicial districts organized into 12 regional circuits. So you remember back in, like, you watched True Grit. You're going to be heard by judge.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. And the circuit court, well, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Okay, so are those broken down by state? Like, for example, would Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania all share an appellate court? Or is there some other way it's divided, like by voting districts? Like, how are these appellate courts divided into circuits?
I think it's just by boundaries. I don't know. I didn't even look at a map at that.
Interesting.
They're 12 regional courts. So maybe one for the Northeast, one for the Southeast, one for...
That would be four. North, Southeast, West.
Yeah, however they do it.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. Probably so. Boundary. Okay.
And so those 12 regional courts, each of which has a court of appeals. So the appellate court's task is to determine whether or not the law was applied correctly in the trial court. So appeals courts consist of three judges, and they don't use a jury. So do you understand?
Was I clear
how that went?
Yeah, so far we haven't had any juries at all. So, like, we've gone from the Supreme Court, the highest law of the land doesn't need a jury.
Yeah.
The closest thing they get to a jury is their clerks.
So these appeals courts aren't even judging or ruling on the judgment. They are just...
Did
the process go right?
Yeah.
Was the penalty consistent among other courts?
So did the penalty fit the crime, basically?
Exactly.
Which is, so I was watching a show this morning, and the guy was, I didn't see the whole show, but the guy was charged with murder. He appealed.
You watching Nightline again?
Something like that. So he was found not guilty in the state court, but the federal courts then came for him. So there's double jeopardy, right? Like, you can't be tried for the same thing twice. But
I'm going to talk about double jeopardy later on.
Okay, but apparently you can by different courts. Like, it's different jurisdictions. So he won the state trial, found not guilty by the state. The federal people came after him.
So they could have brought a federal crime against him. Yeah.
And this guy, they offered him a plea deal of 5 years. He said no. A jury found him guilty and he got life. How mad would you be?
I'd be pretty.
I'd be so mad at myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a murder trial. If you're found innocent, then the state or the federal people could come back and say you denied someone their civil rights, life, and they could charge you.
Yeah.
So they're going to get you. I mean, if you ever see the United States of America versus
Kim, in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Take the plea deal.
You better get you a pretty darn good lawyer.
If they offer you a plea, take it.
Yeah. So a court of appeals hears challenges to district court decisions from courts located within its circuit. You know, that old hanging judge. Okay, in circuit court and Fort Smith. I'll see you hang.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So where was I? Oh, yeah. As well as appeals from decisions from federal administrative agencies. So like the EPA does something like, you know, and they can rule on that.
Okay.
So in addition, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has nationwide jurisdiction to hear appeals in specialized cases, such as those involving patent laws and cases decided by the U.S. Court of International Trade and the U.S. Court of Federal Claims.
Okay, so if it's a federal case, can it be heard in any of those 13 appellate courts, or does it have to be heard in the district in which the original verdict was handed down?
I think we're talking about if there are specialized cases that would involve, like I just said, the patent laws and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that would affect the entire United States.
So
then
it can be heard in any of the 13 appellate cases.
I mean, that's the way I read it. But
interesting.
I'm not a lawyer. So
we need a lawyer.
We need a lawyer. Okay. So there's also a bankruptcy appellate panels. Bankruptcy appellate panels, or BAPs, are three-judge panels authorized to hear appeals of bankruptcy court decisions. These panels are a unit of the Federal Court of Appeals and must be established by that circuit court. So five circuit courts have established panels: the First Circuit, Sixth, Eighth, Ninth, and the Tenth Circuit.
So So why doesn't, what happened to 2 through 5 and 7?
So
like, why don't they
probably because they're authorized to hear cases.
Something else.
I couldn't tell you. I didn't go that in depth in any of this.
We have a lawyer friend. I don't know if she knows all this kind of stuff though.
Yeah, that's what she should learn in law school.
She should be. She's like a trial lawyer, right? Like criminal.
She handles a lot of
criminal lawyer.
Drunk cases and divorces and stuff.
So
like
she
that.
Might not know the stuff.
Yeah,
well, she probably
she
does.
She probably
I
had
don't know.
To in law school. Yeah. I mean, you don't spend all that time in law school.
I don't
for
know if
nothing.
Kayla listens, but
learn
I don't
how
need
to
like...
say starry something. Okay. Anyway,
we should get Kayla on the show.
District anyway. Courts. The nation's 94th district or trial courts are called U.S. district courts. District courts resolve disputes by determining the facts and applying legal principles to decide who is right. Trial courts include the district judge who tries the case and a jury decides the case.
So we finally get into the jury.
Magistrate judges assist district judges in preparing cases for trial.
So they're like the clerks at the Supreme Court.
This is way more complicated than I thought. You're asking questions. I just don't know. Call Kayla. So they may also conduct trials in misdemeanor cases.
Who, the magistrate judges?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's at least, this whole purpose was to try to lay out. That's how it goes. That's how the court system be so complicated. I just want to lay out like the different levels.
Like I said, I speak for the people. Everybody wants to know these. I'm just saying it out loud.
Okay. So there is at least one district court in each state and the District of Columbia. 8 districts include a U.S. bankruptcy court as a unit of the district court. 4 territories of the United States have a U.S. district court to hear federal cases, including bankruptcy cases. Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, and the Northern Mariana Islands.
Okay.
So they're just courts out there. Okay. So there are also 2 special trial courts. The Court of International Trade addresses cases involving international trade and customs laws. The U.S. Court of Federal Claims deals with most claims for money damages against the United States government.
So that's like if you, for example, while you were in one of the government vehicles that you drive occasionally, hit somebody, then that would go to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims?
Probably so.
Ooh, that sounds intimidating.
Yeah.
Don't get in a wreck.
So federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction over bankruptcy cases involving personal, business, or farm bankruptcy. This means that a bankruptcy case cannot be filed in a state court.
Really?
Through the bankruptcy process. Individuals or businesses that can no longer pay their creditors may either seek a court-supervised liquidation of their assets, or they may reorganize their financial affairs and work out a plan to pay their debts. And we've heard this on TV 1,000 times.
But it's at the federal level. Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Also, the idea of a farm bankruptcy.
I'm learning about all this as we're going. Yeah. Yeah.
The idea of a farm bankruptcy makes me really sad. Like, I don't know. A farm going under is much sadder than just a regular person going under, I think. Anyway, Article 1's courts. So Congress created several Article 1 or legislative courts that don't have full judicial power. So judicial power is the authority to be the final decider in all questions of constitutional law, all questions of federal law, and hear all claims at the core of habeas corpus issues. Article 1 courts are the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which you have some experience with, right?
I'm familiar with how they work. I've never appealed a court or appealed anything to Court of Veterans.
So, like, the veterans claims are not so when like, you're getting your disability rating and stuff. That's not what that is.
No, it is.
Okay.
So, like,
oh, it
say,
is.
So
okay.
Like, say you, a veteran, were to make a claim, and the Veterans Administration disagrees with it, and they say, this isn't service-connected.
Okay.
So there are several layers that you can go through, and the last step that you can go through is you can ask for your claim to be heard at the Court for Veterans Claims. So they just rule on it. They, you know, it's all briefs and legal decisions and stuff like that, and they rule if your case was service-connected.
So like the burn pits. That's like a brand new thing among the Veterans Administrations with the disability claims. Now they are, it's relatively, the PACT Act is probably one of those where like somebody had applied for something, it didn't, and they appealed all the way up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and they said, no. Okay, yeah, maybe it is.
You could appeal tinnitus. You're ringing in your ears. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, it has nothing to do with any specific PACT Act or anything like that.
No, I'm saying that's probably where the PACT Act came from. Like, that is why that is a thing now?
No.
Okay, never mind.
No, not at all.
This is so confusing.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this?
It's just your individual claim you don't think has been heard right, and you honestly believe it was caused by your military service and everyone up to them, so then you can go to the court of
just like a criminal thing.
Veterans appeals.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is an Article I court, and you are going to get more into that.
I'm going
that
to go
in
into that
bit.
Very. Yeah.
Okay. And then the U.S. Tax Court. Tax law also is up there with copyright laws, like something that sounds like it would be super fun. Also, trade. What is it? Trademark law.
Yeah.
That also sounds like it would be the most boring thing in the world. No offense if you are a trademark or copyright or tax lawyer. You do you, boo.
Okay. So that essentially is the federal court system. So So now let's start talking about how things are handled. Does everyone understand that?
No.
So let's now talk
no,
about,
I
that's
don't.
Why you go to law school. Let's talk about how things are handled at the state level.
Do we have time to talk about the state level?
No. Well, we do. But to keep the show to an hour, we're only going to discuss the court system in Ohio. So I looked at a few other states and their court systems, and while they are similar from state to state, there are differences. Maybe it's just a court is named something different, or it's just how different cases are handled. So state courses.
So like, okay, I'm sorry. And I know I'm interrupting you so many times. I'm frustrating you. If you could see his face right now. I wonder if, like, Pennsylvania, for example, is still a commonwealth. I wonder if their laws are different from state laws. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but no.
Or, like, if our territory...
You get charged by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, not by the state of Ohio.
Or, and, like, do the territories have different systems, like Guam... Do they do things the exact same way that we do in, well, I mean, not rough, in Ohio, like Guam and Ohio the same basic.
And that's what I said. There's different states and different jurisdictions.
Yeah.
Let's just talk states. So state courts see a lot more cases than the federal courts because that's down where the people are. Mm-hmm. While both federal and state courts hear criminal cases, there is not much call for a federal court to hear a traffic case or a divorce case. So here at an hour of your life, we're just going to follow the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid.
Mm.
We're just going to talk about Ohio and the rules of each level in the Ohio court, keeping in mind that every other state, and probably Guam, has their own level of court system that might be a little bit different, but essentially, you know, like maybe...
It's the same. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the Ohio court structure... The Supreme Court is established by Article 4, Section 1 of the Ohio Constitution, which provides that, quote, the judicial power of the state is vested in a Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, Courts of Common Pleas, and divisions thereof, and such other courts inferior to the Supreme Court.
I like that, inferior.
As may from time to time be established by law. So in other words, it's fine. As many courts as you need, just whatever.
Well, if you had the morbs, you're really perked up now.
Because nothing makes me happier than annoying you. The Ohio Constitution sets the size of the court at a chief justice and 6 associate justices.
So Ohio does, Constitution does say you can't pack the court.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to say how superior we are to the federal system. Anyway, we also outline the jurisdiction of the court. The Supreme Court is the court of last resort in Ohio. The court may grant leave to appeal criminal cases from the courts of appeals and may direct any court of appeals to certify its record on civil cases to be found cases of public or great interest. So in other words, if it is a civil case that actually could affect the public at large, then it gets special treatment.
Very similar to the Supreme Court.
Right. the Supreme Court of Ohio makes rules governing the practice and procedure in Ohio courts.
So they set the rules for all the courts in Ohio.
Yep.
So in Ohio, then you have the Court of Appeals, which falls just below the Supreme Court of Ohio. This court is divided regionally into 12 districts. As an intermediate level court, its primary function is to hear appeals from the courts of common pleas and municipal and county courts, which may in turn be further appealed to the Supreme Court. Each case is heard and decided by a 3-judge panel. The appellate court also hears appeals from some administrative agencies and have first time it's heard, jurisdiction over writs of habeas corpus, mandamus procedendo, prohibition, and quo warranto.
Which are not spells in Harry Potter world, but are actually legal terms. So let's define them.
That's why you go to law school.
And then we will call it a day and finish this up next week. All right, so the great writ of habeas corpus, which we mentioned before, it's a fundamental right in the Constitution that protects against unlawful and indefinite imprisonment. Translated from Latin, it means show me the body, for you Jerry Maguire fans. That's dating myself, but anyway. Habeas corpus has historically been an important instrument to safeguard individual freedom against arbitrary executive power. So in other words, habeas corpus says, you got nothing on me. Like, if you don't have anything on me, you can't keep me in prison. A writ of mandamus is a transformer. Just kidding. It's an order from a court to an inferior government official ordering the government official to properly fulfill their official duties or correct an abuse of discretion. So basically, a writ of mandamus is the court saying, do your job.
Correctly.
Yeah. And then from, in common law jurisprudence, procedendo... is one of the prerogative writs. It is a writ, I think, is just basically like a rule, right? Or like a saying, I guess, that issues a case out of an appellate court and into a lower court with an order to proceed to judgment. It's derived from the Latin term procedendum, which means to proceed. So in other words, instead of going to the Court of Appeals, it goes back to the lower court and says, give us a judgment. Let's get this moving. A writ of prohibition is a judicial order that may be used at a higher court's discretion to prevent a lower court from interfering with a higher court's determination of a case pending an appeal. So in other words, it's the highest court saying, you guys stay down there. We're going to handle this one. This is too big for you. Above your pay grade.
You don't know anything like we do.
So in law, especially English and American common law, quo warranto, which is medieval Latin for by what warrant, is a prerogative writ requiring the person to whom it is directed to show what authority they have for exercising some right, power, or franchise they claim to hold. So in other words, quo warranto is basically, you're not the boss of me. What gives you the right? So here's a tidbit of information that's going to help you win at trivia one day. Maybe. May help you win at trivia one day. Appellate court judges do not have the authority to perform weddings, but they can be appointed by the Supreme Court of Ohio to serve as a probate court judge for one day for the purposes of performing a wedding. I can perform weddings.
You can.
Yeah, so if you ever want me to perform your wedding, I'm not a judge, but I am licensed to perform weddings.
Okay.
So I'll do it for you.
So
for free, probably.
When we put this together, I thought we would just go through this in an hour, but apparently,
silly Steve,
this has really piqued Kim's interest and it's drawn her out of her morbe to do this. But you know, I find this as confusing as it is.
Right, I'm trying to help everybody understand it.
Boy, that sounds really boring. I find it fascinating in that people can keep up. The court system can keep up with all these different things.
This is why law school is so freaking expensive.
Yeah, that's because, why you got to pay a lawyer like $500 an hour.
Because they're going to Google and looking up Quo warranto. What am I doing? What's happening?
Yeah, and they got to be able to say that word.
Right?
Too. I could never be a lawyer.
Yeah. I can see me as a lawyer going to Google and going to like the set or YouTube, like typing in pronounce quo warranto and like listening to the thing to tell me how to say it.
And we've had plenty of episodes that doesn't help me in the least.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we...
And this has actually turned out for me to be a pretty fun episode.
Well, good. I'm glad. For me, I'm just as confused as when we started, but that's fine.
Can you imagine, though? It's, to me, it's the same thing like in Congress. Well, we're going to change the rule for this one proceeding, but we have to vote on the... what do they call that? The rules of parliament, or...
I have no idea.
Yeah, there's that official term for...
My eyes are glazing over as you speak.
Okay. So
we're not going to finish this today, but I am going to go do a minute of your life on sedition, insurrection, and treason, which just means that I'm going to have to do something else next week for a minute of your life that involves the legal system, which is whatever. It's fine.
Okay. So, Kim, how yes. can they find us lawyers? Again, if you're a justice on the Supreme Court, a clerk, a lawyer,
just
an
anybody.
Ohio Supreme Court, someone who knows what they're talking about with this, give us a call and we will put you on the air next week.
We would love to interview you. Like so much we would love to interview you. Maybe you can help explain this to us. You can write to us, email at alosthour@gmail.com, or you can go to anhourofyourlife.com. We are also on most of the socials. We have a Threads account. We have a Facebook account. We have a TikTok account. We have an Instagram account. All of those are...
We gave up on the X account.
Yeah, we did. All of those things are an hour of your life. So that's where you can find us. Also, can I make an announcement?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it too early?
No.
Okay. Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, are you going to push a button?
I was going to wait till you did it.
Okay. An Hour of Your Life is very, very proud and very, very excited to be an official sponsor of the 2024 Squonkapalooza. I am so stoked.
So come to Johnstown, Pennsylvania and see us next summer.
It is this summer. This summer. In August.
Well, that is next summer.
Well, I mean, I guess it sounds way better if you say this summer. Anyway, so we will be at Squonkapalooza because y'all know, like, I love cryptids and Steve loves camping and I do too, but the Squonk is my favorite. This is the second Squonkapalooza ever. We are so excited to, we'll have a table, we'll have stuff to give away. We are going to be interviewing people to put on the podcast. So if you live in the Johnstown, Pennsylvania area, or if you happen to be a cryptid fan and you are going to be at Squonkapalooza, please come find us. I believe it is a free event. So go support the Merchants of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Come find us. You will hear so much more as we get close to time. We'll probably do an episode on the Squonk sometime in August. I'm just really excited.
Bigfoot.
So excited.
Maybe, well, my favorite is Bigfoot.
I know.
But just to prove a point, I made a cryptid.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe I'll tell that story.
You'll tell about the Owlman?
The Owlman of Bellbrook. Yeah, maybe. I'll do that.
Okay, so we're running out of time. But anyway, so we are excited to be official sponsors of this year's Squonkapalooza. Thank you so much to Cryptid Comforts for creating and sponsoring Squonkapalooza 2024.
All right. So if there's nothing else.
Not for now.
We barely made it through half. But anyway, we're right at 58 minutes and 40 seconds. So from our studios in Sugar Creek Township.
Thanks for spending an hour of your life with us. You get no sources this week. You have to come back and listen to the Rex next week, and then I will give you your sources. Have a great week.